Good morning. Welcome to Daily Sabbath today. Rooted in Gustavus's Swedish Lutheran heritage, the chaplain's office equips students to live and lead in a religiously diverse world. As such, Christ Chapel is both a sacred space for Christian worship and a gathering place to learn about and appreciate a wide variety of religious traditions, celebrations, and practices. Today, we invite you to learn about the Jewish holiday, Rosh Hashanah, a two-day celebration of the Jewish New Year that begins the time in Judaism known as the High Holidays. This year, Rosh Hashanah began at sunset on Sunday, October 2nd, and it ends today at sunset. At the end of the service, following the trumpet blasts, we invite you to join us in the back of the chapel for a traditional Rosh Hashanah food, apples dipped in honey.
I'd like to open with the blessing of praise, the Shachachianu. Baruch Ata Adonai, Eloheinu Melech Haolam, Shachachianu, V'kiyamanu, V'higianu, Lazman Hazeh. Amen. Blessed are you, Lord our God, Sovereign of the universe, who has granted us life, sustained us, and enabled us to reach this occasion. Amen.
Happy New Year. And every morning at the time of the penitential prayers, the rabbi of Nemirov would disappear, vanish. He was nowhere to be seen, neither in the synagogue, nor in the two study houses, nor at a prayer gathering where he was expected to be. And he certainly was not at home. His door stood open. Anyone who wished could go in and out. No one would steal from the rabbi, but not a soul was within. Where could the rabbi be? Where should he be? In heaven, of course. Do you think a rabbi doesn't have a lot to do between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur? Jews, God bless them, need to make a living. They need peace, health, and good marriages for their children. They want to be pious and good, but Satan, with his thousand eyes, watches and accuses and informs. Who can help us make our case with God, if not the rabbi? That's what the people thought. It was the only explanation. But one day, a Litvak came and he laughed. You know the Litvaks. They think little of the holy books, but cram themselves with Talmud and commentaries. So this Litvak pointed to an explicit text where it is written that even Moses did not ascend to heaven during his lifetime, but remained suspended 2.5 feet below. Go argue with a Litvak. So where could the rabbi be during the high holidays? That's not my business, said the Litvak, shrugging. Yet all the while he resolved to get to the bottom of the mystery. That same night, right after the evening prayers, the Litvak stole into the rabbi's room, slid under the rabbi's bed, and waited. He was determined to discover where the rabbi vanished and what he did during the penitential prayers. It was hard to stay awake all night, but a Litvak is stubborn. So he shivered like a fish in the water, but he continued to lie there. At dawn, he heard the call to prayers. The rabbi had already been awake for a long time. That Litvak heard him groaning for a whole hour. Whoever has heard the rabbi of Nemirov groan knows how much sorrow for the Jewish people, how much suffering there was in each groan. Finally, the rabbi, God bless him, arose. First, he did what befits a Jew. Then he went into the clothes closet and took out a bundle of peasant clothes, linen trousers, high boots, a coat, a big felt hat, and a long, wide leather belt studded with brass nails. The rabbi got dressed. From his coat pocket dangled the end of a heavy rope, the kind that peasants use. On the way out the door, the rabbi stopped in the kitchen, bent down, took an axe from under the bed, put it into his belt, and left the house. The Litvak trembled, but he did not falter. The hushed dread of the days of awe hung over the dark streets. Every once in a while, a cry rose up from some minion reciting the penitential prayers, or from a sickbed, The Litvak heard the sound of his own heartbeats mingling with the sound of the rabbi's heavy steps, but he kept on going and followed the rabbi to a small wood on the outskirts of town. The rabbi, God bless him, stopped by a small tree. The Litvak, overcome with amazement, watched as the rabbi chopped the tree into logs and the logs into sticks. Then the rabbi made a bundle of the wood and tied it with the rope in his pocket. He put the bundle of wood on his back and shoved the axe back into his belt and returned to the town. He stopped at a back street beside a small, broken-down shack and knocked at the window. "Who's there?" answered a frightened voice. The rabbi answered in the voice of a Russian peasant. "It is Vasil. I have firewood to sell, very cheap. I'm practically giving it away." And not waiting for the woman's reply, he went into the house. The Litvak stole in after him. In the gray light of early morning, he saw a poor room with broken, miserable furnishings. A sick woman, wrapped in rags, lay on the bed, and she said bitterly, "Buy! How can I buy? Where would a poor widow get money?" "I'll lend it to you," answered the supposed Vasil. "It's only 6 groschen. "And how will I ever pay you back?" asked the poor woman. "Foolish one," said the rabbi reproachfully. "See, you are a poor, sick Jew, and I am ready to trust you with a little firewood. I have faith you'll pay me. While you have such a great and mighty God, and you don't have faith in him for a silly 6 groschen's worth of wood?" "And who will kindle my fire?" asked the widow. "Have I the strength to get up? My son has to stay away at his job." "I'll kindle the fire," answered the rabbi. As he kindled the fire and the wood burned brightly, the rabbi recited the penitential prayers. At last, when the fire settled into a steady glow, the rabbi took his leave without waiting for thanks. And the Litvak, who saw all this, became a disciple of the rabbi of Nemirov. And ever after, when another disciple told of how the rabbi got up each morning during the days of awe and flew up to heaven, the Litvak would not laugh at all, but would add quietly, "And maybe even higher."
Shana Tova, Happy New Year. This next section comes from Genesis chapter 22, verses 1 through 24, the binding of Isaac. Sometime afterward, God put Abraham to the test. He said to him, "Abraham," and he answered, "Here I am." And he said, "Take your son, your favored one, Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah, and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the heights which I will point out to you." So early next morning, Abraham saddled his ass and took with him 2 of his servants and his son Isaac. He split the wood for the burnt offering, and he set out for the place of which God had told him. On the third day, Abraham looked up and saw the place from afar. Then Abraham said to his servants, "You stay here with the ass. The boy and I will go up there. We will worship and we will return to you." Abraham took the wood for the burnt offering and put it on his son Isaac. He himself took the fire stone and the knife, and the two walked off together. Then Isaac said to his father Abraham, "Father," and he answered, "Yes, my son." And he said, "Here are the fire stone and the wood, but where is the sheep for the burnt offering?" And Abraham said, "God will see to the sheep for his burnt offering, my son." And the two of them walked on together. They arrived at the place which God had told him. Abraham built an altar there. He laid out the wood, he bound his son Isaac, he laid him on the altar on top of the wood, and Abraham picked up the knife to slay his son. Then an angel of the Lord called to him from heaven, "Abraham, Abraham," and he answered, "Here I am." And he said, "Do not raise your hand against the boy or do anything to him, for now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your favored one, from me." When Abraham looked up and his eye fell upon a ram caught in the thicket by its horns, so Abraham went and took the ram and offered it up as a burnt offering in place of his son. And Abraham named that site Adonai Yireh. whence the present saying, on the mount of the Lord there is vision. The angel of the Lord called to Abraham a second time from heaven and said, by myself I swear, the Lord declares, because you have done this and have not withheld your son, your favored one, I will bestow my blessing upon you and make your descendants as numerous as the stars of heaven and the sands of the seashore. And your descendants shall seize the gates of their foes. All the nations of earth shall bless themselves by your descendants because you have obeyed my command. Abraham then returned to his servant, and they departed together for Beersheba. And Abraham stayed in Beersheba. Sometime later, Abraham was told, Milcah, too, has born children to your brother Nahor, Uz the firstborn, and Buz his brother, and Kemuel the father of Aram, and Chesed, and Hazo, Pildash, Jildpah, and Bethuel. Bethuel being the father of Rebekah, these eight Milcah born to Nahor, Abraham's brother, and his concubine, whose name was Rumah, also bore children Tabah, Gaham, Tahash, and Ma'akah. Shana Tova, Toda Rabba. Have a nice new year. Thank you very much.
The Shana Tova, Happy New Year. I'm talking to you now on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. This is a two-day holiday that began Sunday night for Jews everywhere, and it marks the beginning of a penitential season that lasts 10 days. So for the next 10 days, Jews around the world are engaging in a process called Cheshbon HaNefesh, which means taking stock or taking account of our souls. We're looking for all the errors we made over the past year in our personal relationships and in connection with the wider world, figuring out what we did wrong, making amends, and promising to do better. 10 days from now will be Yom Kippur, the Jewish Day of Atonement, and that's when everything comes to a climax with a 24-hour fast, synagogue prayers, and then a big, happy meal. The Jewish New Year is filled with symbols of sweetness. We eat apples dipped in honey and wish each other a sweet new year. But we also, in religious services, are reminded that none of us knows if we will live or die in the coming 12 months, and that all of us need to take responsibility for the way we live our lives now, today, and in the future. Jews around the world are apologizing to our loved ones for any pain we caused this past year. We are also contemplating errors we made on a bigger stage. For example, ignoring social or environmental problems, or even contributing to them. This self-examination is serious work. We front-load the sweets, the apples and honey, to give us strength for the 10 days ahead. The Jewish New Year, therefore, is complicated, a blend of guilt, enjoyment, hope, and a commitment to improve. So it is appropriate that on the second day of the Jewish New Year, today, Jews traditionally read a complicated story from the Bible in synagogue, the story that Josh read so beautifully, a story from Genesis, the first book of the Jewish Bible, which Christians call the Old Testament. Jews and Christians share many Bible stories, although we sometimes interpret them in different ways. Jews do not see this story, for example, as a foreshadowing of Jesus' sacrifice on the cross, as Christians do. But there is no one single interpretation of this or other Bible stories that is accepted by all Jews, either. And many interpretations are shared among Jews and Christians. The story is an agonizing one. God tells Abraham to sacrifice his beloved son Isaac, the heir to the promise, the one through whom God has promised to bless Abraham with many descendants. For 3 days, father and son walk together to the site where Abraham is to slaughter Isaac. At the very last moment, however, Abraham hears the voice of an angel telling him to stop. The angel speaks again. Then Abraham looks up and sees a sheep caught in the thicket, sacrifices the sheep, and silently descends the mountain with his son. The story, which Jews call the binding of Isaac, is one of the starkest and subtlest in the Bible. It's raw in its understatement. And that understatement lays out Abraham's conflict excruciatingly clearly. Abraham calls God. Abraham responds, "Here I am." "Father?" asks Isaac. Abraham responds, "Here I am." Abraham is answerable to both God and Son, responsible to both. But what they ask and want of him is different: to take Isaac's life or to save it. This is a requirement to meet two conflicting moral imperatives. And we don't know what the Bible is having us understand about what the characters are thinking, right? It doesn't say. Isaac asks, "Where is the sheep for the sacrifice?" Is he trusting or is he suspicious? Abraham answers, "God will see to the sheep." Is he trusting or is he lying? Caught in a moral dilemma. Don't we all sometimes lie? Ultimately, you could say there's a happy ending, right? But not all ancient rabbis saw it this way. They pointed out that in the Bible, Isaac and Abraham never speak again. Sarah, Isaac's mother, dies soon after. Maybe she learned what happened. They chastise Abraham for not speaking up on Isaac's behalf. There's another very famous Bible story a couple of chapters earlier in which Abraham argues, Jewish tradition, argues vehemently with God on behalf of the sinners of Sodom. And he doesn't argue on behalf of his son. But other rabbis praised Abraham for his immediate, unquestioning obedience. And here's my dilemma. This is an ambiguous story. It's a morally ambiguous story. And we read it at the time of year when Jews everywhere are trying to figure out how to act in a moral way, right? So this is confusing. As a Jew, I was raised in a 2,000-year tradition of arguing about sacred texts. You may have heard the expression, two Jews, three opinions. So there's no one correct interpretation, and a lot of the interpretations we come up with build on each other. And the one I'm going to give you is mine, and it draws on interpretations, both Jewish and Christian, throughout the ages. Because I'm seeing this story as responding to questions we face today. I think that Abraham spent those 3 days walking up the mountain with his son, silently pleading with God. He pleaded that Isaac was his beloved son. He reasoned that Isaac was the one through whom the future generations would receive the covenant. But God did not respond. They arrived at the mountaintop with God's demand still ringing in Abraham's ears. And then Abraham slowed down. He was faced with what seemed an impossible dilemma. But he didn't give up hope. He looked, he listened. And in fact, he heard a message. The word angel in Hebrew means messenger. He heard a message not to kill Isaac. He looked up, there was an alternative. There was a ram caught in the thicket. The situation looked hopeless. No solution, no hope, no way out, like some of the geopolitical conflicts facing us today. But there was a solution. So I see the story as providing a model for all of us. We need not to deny. The High Holy Days are about ending our denial, looking at the consequences of our actions. Where are they leading? Slowing down, looking at all the available resources and not giving up hope, no matter how dire problems seem. Because Abraham, in the nick of time, was able to stop the execution, save his son, save his connection with God, and save the lives of future generations. So, we face a lot of serious troubles today in the world, and this is a serious and troubling text. But I read it also in the context of the Jewish tradition. We are not supposed to ignore problems, but neither is it our job to do it all ourselves. This is the message of the rabbis, right? And here we are starting a new year with sweetness, with apples and honey. And We need that sweetness. We need to remember that to face the challenges ahead. And now we're going to have blasts of the shofar. This is a very traditional instrument. We think of it when we think of the ram that's caught in the thicket by its horns. And Kara is going to sound the shofar blast in the traditional way that they're done on this holiday. I'll call out the name of each blast first. Tikia. Shavarim Teruah. Tikia. Tikia. Shavarim. Tikia. Teruah. Tikia. Now, in a moment, I'm going to call out the final blast. This is a prayerful setting, but in synagogues everywhere, it's appropriate to respond if it grabs you. Tikia gedola. And now I invite us all to go outside for apples and honey.